Well, if you have a Bible, please open with me to Jonah chapter 2. Last week I started a new series entitled Sharing God's Heart for the City, and we're on the second installment of that, and we're going to be looking at Jonah's prayer from the belly of the great fish in Jonah 2. So let me read this before we sing again. Jonah chapter 2, verse 1. Then Jonah prayed to the Lord, his God, from the belly of the fish, saying, I called out to the Lord out of my distress, and he answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol I cried, and you heard my voice. For you cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas, and the flood surrounded me. All your waves and your billows passed over me. Then I said, I am driven away from your sight, yet I shall look up again upon your holy temple. The waters closed in over me to take my life, and deep surrounded me. Weeds were wrapped about my head at the roots of the mountains. I went down to the land whose bars closed upon me forever. Yet, you brought up my life from the pit, O Lord my God. When my life was fainting away, I remembered the Lord, and my prayer came to you, into your holy temple. Those who pay regard to vain idols forsake their hope of steadfast love, but I, with the voice of thanksgiving, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will pay. Salvation belongs to the Lord. And the Lord spoke to the fish, and it vomited Jonah out upon the dry land. This is God's word. Corrie and Betsy Ten Boom, along with their father, were Dutch watchmakers, Christians, who hid Jews in their home to protect them from the Nazis during the Second World War. When they were discovered and caught, not only were the Jews seeking refuge in their home captured and taken away to a camp, Corrie, her sister Betsy, and her family were taken as well. And in her most famous book, The Hiding Place, Corrie Ten Boom recounts the story of her family's efforts to help Jews, as well as her time spent in the concentration camp. After watching one atrocity after another in the notorious women's labor camp called Ravensbrück, Betsy eventually fell ill and died. That was Corrie's sister. Just before she died, Betsy spoke of her hope of sharing one of the lessons they had learned during their time in the camp with the outside world. Betsy, in the throes of death, said to Corrie, we must tell people what we have learned here. We must tell them that there is no pit so deep that he is not deeper still. They will listen to us, Corrie, because we've been here. Jonah's prayer in Jonah chapter 2 demonstrates to us Jonah's experience of learning that same truth. That there is no pit so deep that God in his love is not deeper still. Last week we saw the folly of Jonah's attempt to run away from God. And we saw the amazing grace of a God who pursued him, who provided a storm to stop him in his tracks, who, when Jonah was hurled into the sea, provided a fish to swallow Jonah up and become his place of rescue. And last week we left off with Jonah in the belly of the fish, wondering what might happen next. And now in chapter 2, verse 1, we're told, and he prayed, Jonah, or and Jonah prayed from the belly of the fish to the Lord his God. This prayer in Jonah chapter 2 comes from a deep place in more ways than one. It comes from a deep place physically, as in right down in the guts of a large fish, but it comes deep from the heart of Jonah. When one has been running from the Lord, the prayer of one turning back and saying, I'm looking again to you, comes from a deep place. This prayer takes us on a journey down through, first, Jonah's recounting the depth of the mess he's gotten himself into. Then Jonah speaks of the deeper love of God. And then third, he shares a deep lesson for us all. So the depth of his mess, the deeper love of God, the deep lesson for us all. That's our outline, our map for this evening. So verses 2-7, the depth of Jonah's mess. Jonah's prayer opens, you'll notice, with his reflection on an earlier prayer he must have prayed when he hit the water or was just in the water after having been hurled overboard. The opening line of verse 2 serves as a kind of summary of his experience. I called out to the Lord out of my distress, and he answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol I cried, and you heard my voice. Now, when he uses that language, out of the belly of Sheol, that strange word is a Hebrew word which speaks of the place of the dead. In a sense, Jonah's saying, I felt like I was in the very jaws of death. And from that place, I cried out to the Lord, and he heard my voice, and he rescued me. It's almost like one of those movies, and I've used this illustration before because the psalmists do this all the time. It's like someone in a movie who starts the movie almost at the end of the story. The opening scene of a movie, like Forrest Gump is a good example that I've used before. Forrest sitting on the bench, and he's right towards the end of the story, and then the whole movie tracks back through the journey that has brought him to that point. That's what's going on here. Jonah's saying, here in a nutshell is my story, and now let me, in this prayer, recount the journey. As his prayer is recorded for us, we're tracing with Jonah's recounting and remembering his journey down before the Lord came and lifted him. And so verse 3, you cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas, and the flood surrounded me. All your waves and your billows passed over me. So we're to see Jonah now almost panting, feeling like he's safe in this fish, saying, wow, you'd cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas. The flood surrounded me. All your waves and billows were passing over me. You see, what is important to see in this part of Jonah's prayer is his understanding that though in chapter 1, verse 15, we read that it was the sailors in the boat that hurled Jonah overboard, Jonah understands that behind all of this is a sovereign God who was stopping Jonah in his tracks and saving him from his rebellion. Jonah understands the difference between a primary cause and a secondary cause. What do I mean? It was the sailors who threw him into the water, yes, but the primary cause behind all of that was a sovereign God. And it's an interesting little note. I don't think we should make too much of it. That the same word in Hebrew for God hurled the storm to stop him in his tracks is the same word used for when the sailors hurled Jonah into the sea. And here now, Jonah's praying and saying, Lord, you were the one, ultimately, that cast me into the deep. It was God who brought his hard turn of events and his difficult, distressing experience in the depths. As Paul Tripp reminds us, God in his love will distress us to bring the turning that is his will. This is the uncomfortable grace of a redeeming God. Sinclair Ferguson, that Scottish theologian and pastor, has written a wonderful little book on Jonah entitled Man Overboard. Here's what Sinclair Ferguson writes when reflecting on the sovereignty of God behind Jonah being cast into the distress of the deep. Ferguson writes, few principles are more important in the Christian life than the practical recognition of the sovereign God and his gracious determination to draw us near to himself, whatever the cost may be. When his purposes involve afflictions and suffering of any kind, the knowledge that he is sovereignly overruling is the only thing that can preserve us from a craven fear or sense of despair and bring us a measure of joyful and willing acceptance in our situation. What Ferguson is saying is that it is absolutely essential in our distress that we remember God is still in control. He hasn't forgotten me. He hasn't left me as if he's turned around for a moment and all this bad stuff has happened. He is ordaining the events in our lives to draw us continually to a deeper reliance on him. And when we are relying on things that are not him, often with uncomfortable grace, he knocks the props out a little so that we will come to a stronger place, falling back on him, the God of grace. But we must be convinced in our hearts of the truth of Romans 8:28. We know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him and who have been called according to his purpose. And that purpose is his indestructible, unstoppable purpose to make his people more like Christ. So in our distress, in the uncomfortable grace, we must remember that it is still grace. Well, in verse 4, Jonah, in his prayer, reflects on how he thought he was going to be cut off from the Lord, which is ironic because, remember, just in chapter 1, he was the one who was running away from God's presence. And now he's afraid that Sheol and the place of the dead is going to close over him and he'll be isolated from God forever. But he says, yet I shall look again upon your holy temple. See, we're to remember Jonah in the water praying and saying, I shall look again towards you, Lord. He thought that he was gone and he's saying, yet I shall look again towards you, Lord. This is a struggle of faith. The one who looks to God as their only hope. It's the prayer of one who says, Lord, I feel that I'm sinking, but I'm looking to you. But in verse 5, he continues as he's struggling in prayer to speak of how he was sinking down and down and down. The waters closed in over me, deep surrounded me, weeds were wrapped around my head. In verse 6, he speaks of being brought down to the roots of the mountains, to the land whose bars closed in over forever. You're to think of Jonah almost in a state of unconsciousness as he sunk down to the bottom of the ocean. And here the journey that started in chapter 1 with him going down to Joppa and down into the ship brings us to its lowest point. He goes down, down, down until he hits rock bottom. Mentioned this last week, but it's good to remember it again. Running away from the Lord will always set you off in a downward direction. We have to ask, if we are running, how low will the Lord have to bring us before we come to our senses and turn again to him? We observed last week that it doesn't have to be location. It doesn't have to be a situation that you're running away from to be running away from God. Running from God is living large chunks of your life as if he's not even there. It's doing things your own way, believing that our plans are better than his. And so refusing to bow the knee to his will and saying, no, 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 I'll go my way. Maybe your running is not as dramatic as Jonah's. Maybe in a very subtle way. Perhaps even for many years now, your love for the Lord and his presence has grown cold. You're hiding perhaps in an array of religious activity, trying to make up for it with a show of commitment. But God knows, and you know, that there's not really much substance left when you're outside of the church meeting. How low do you have to be brought before God, before you will turn to God and cry out to him? Perhaps even this evening's message might be a gracious call from God to you to wake up and turn to him afresh. And I'm really wanting to speak to someone who feels that way, that on the outward tonight, everyone would look and think it's all okay, but you know, for years now, there's been a coldness. And in a sense, you've been running from the presence of the Lord for a long time. And maybe tonight the Lord would be saying, it's time for you to turn. Maybe your running has been more dramatic. Maybe there's someone here this evening who is a prodigal. Maybe when you were young years ago, you were on fire for the Lord, and then you just turned away and went the other direction. There could be people who are listening to this evening, or who could be listening to it later on via the web or a CD, and they're at rock bottom this evening, feeling like you're too far to cry out to God for God to hear you. And you know you've run away from God, and you know you're in a mess. Well, as we move now from Jonah recounting and bringing his prayer to us, as he speaks of the depths he was in, we see now that he reflects and recounts in his prayer his experience of a love of God that went deeper than the deep mess he had got himself into. He's recounted how he's descended from the surface with the waves and the billows crashing over him, that sort of top of the water language, to how he's went down and down to the roots of the mountain. But the second half of verse 6 is just a beautiful turning point of this prayer. He remembers how the Lord brought his life up from the pit, and the sentence starts with this word, yet. Yet, he's thinking, I was down low, yet you brought my life up from the pit, O Lord, my God. And in verse 7, he says, when he was at his lowest point, something totally situation transforming happened. He said, I remembered the Lord. In that low place, I remembered the Lord. Do you ever have those moments where something happens that ruffles your sense of well-being? A day can be going great, you can be in the top of the world, and then something happens, whether it's a comment from someone or a phone call or unsettling news, and we can flap around for ages wondering what to do, how can I fix this, how can I make this better, how can I make this right? And then after being in a tizzy for quite some time, we suddenly think, Hang on. God is with me. I can pray. And after flapping around for a while, we remember and we start to turn that anxiety and turn that ruffled sense of inner peace that's been lost. We start to turn it into prayer and say, Lord, I want to invite you into this. I don't want to make it look as I've got to work it out all on my own. I want you to be at the center of this. It happens to us. Jonah has run from God. He's sinking into Bunyan's slough of despond. And then he remembers. I wonder what he remembered about the Lord in that moment. Could it have been perhaps these well-known words from Exodus 34 that Jonah quotes later on in the book? Jonah 34, 6 and 7, this great revelation where God passes by Moses saying, the Lord, a God who is merciful and gracious, slow to anger, abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness, keeping steadfast love for thousands, forgiving iniquity and transgression and sin. I wonder, did he remember in that low, difficult place, hang on, God is a merciful God. Well, whatever he remembers, he shouts, help me, Lord, save me. And verse 7 wraps the back end of the prayer with the front end summary of verse 2. When my life was fainting away, I remembered the Lord, and my prayer came to you into your holy temple. So you got this little end, book end. And then at the start, I called to the Lord out of my distress. He answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol I cried, and you heard my voice. The point is clear. Jonah in his prayer is saying, from the deepest place, I cried out to him. And he came deeper underneath me and lifted me. And he provided me with a place of salvation. Like the psalmist in Psalm 40, Jonah could say, he inclined unto me. And he heard my cry. He drew me up from the pit of destruction, out of the miry bog, and set my feet on a rock. Jonah was down deep, but God's love reached down deeper still. And think of how this is such a demonstration of the extravagant grace of God. He did not owe Jonah anything. Jonah had received so much from the hand of God, and yet he had rebelled from God, he turned from God, he ran away, got himself into a mess. God owed Jonah nothing. And yet, as Jonah called to the Lord, the Lord, the gracious, compassionate God, reached down and saved him. If you're a Christian here this evening, do you remember well when God did that for you? We might not all have testimonies like some that we hear that are more dramatic, where someone speaks of literally being in that slough of despond. But theologically, the Bible tells us that all of us were in a pit of sin and death that was so deep and so shut in over us that we were without hope. Yet, Christ came to us and kicked through the bars and the doors that imprisoned us, and did not just say, come on. He breathed life into us and lifted us and carried us out. And this fish that was God, or Jonah's place of salvation, is just a sign of a greater rescue when Christ came and provided the place of rescue through his death and resurrection. Do you really want to run from that? Maybe God has ordained a storm for you that you feel you're in right now, for perhaps he wants to say in that storm, I want you to rely more fully on me. This is uncomfortable grace, but it's still grace. No matter how deep down you feel you are this evening, you're never out of his reach. There is no place in this universe that is so deep that his arms are not long enough to reach down and lift you. So Jonah in his prayer recounts how deep he went or had gone, or whatever the grammatically proper way to say that is. And then he remembers the deeper love of the Lord. But now he lifts us up with a very important lesson. The lesson of the storm, the lesson of the deep place, the lesson of running away. The point comes in verse 8. Those who pay regard to vain idols forsake their hope of steadfast love. He's framing his whole experience of turning away from God to go some other place as idolatry. You see, idolatry is not just bowing down to false little statues or false little things we've made. Idolatry is turning away from the Creator God to look for fulfillment in things that are not God. Idolatry is giving created things the place that only God should have in our lives. So we have to ask ourselves, and Paul Tripp is very incisive in the way he does this, we have to ask ourselves a series of questions. Has your husband or wife taken a place in your life that only God should have? Has your desire for a husband or wife taken the place in your life that only God should have? Has your job taken a place that only God should have? Has your idea of retirement and rest taken the place that only God should have? Are you saying God could do whatever he wants as long as he doesn't interfere with my idea of a nice, quiet retirement? Has your money taken the place that God only should have? Or your idea that you're in control, has that taken the place that only God should have in your life? It's interesting in Jonah's case, he thought he knew better than God, and as is so often the case for all of us, I guess, Jonah's greatest idol was himself. He knew what God's will was, and he didn't like it. He refused to bow the knee to God's will, and he said, no, I'll do it my way. He turned from the living God to worshipping himself and living for himself. As Augustine of Hippo said, he curved in on himself and exchanged love for God for love for self. We all do this. We put the place that only God should have on the throne of our hearts. We put God off that place and we usurp his throne, and we do that all the time. In many moments in every day, we're usurping the throne so often when he should have sovereign reign there. And we must say, Lord, help me not to take the place that is yours in my own life. Help me not to set myself up as the idol that takes your throne. Jonah says, any time we turn from God to idolatry, even if it's self-idolatry, we're making a big mistake, because all we're doing is forsaking our true hope of knowing secure, giving love that satisfies. When we think we know better, if we run and go our own way, all we're doing is running away from the one who can truly give us what we long for. Jonah's testimony in this prayer is, I turned from him. I thought I knew better, and look at the mess it got me into. In verse 9, he's saying, I'm turning back to him. But I, with the voice of thanksgiving, will sacrifice to you. What I vowed, I will pay. He's saying, I'm coming back to you, Lord, my first love, my initial commitment to live for you as a man of God. And then the theme of the book comes as Jonah says, wow, God is a God of salvation. Salvation comes from the Lord. I couldn't have saved myself. It's not that he just provides salvation and makes it possible. He saves. Have you realized this yourself this evening? Your job can't give you what God can give you. Your money can't give you what God can give you. Your self-made identity cannot give you what God can give you. Your husband, even your wife, cannot give you what God can give you. Maybe for many years, you haven't realized that you've been putting your hope in a created thing rather than the Creator. And maybe tonight, you need to say again, Lord, help me, whatever that idol may be, help me to tear it from your throne and worship only thee. Those wonderful words from the hymn, O For a Closer Walk with God. And Paul in Romans says, after speaking of the wrath of God that is upon all of us rebellious running Jonahs, he says that in that wonderful chapter 10, anyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. You see, there is salvation in no one else. There's no other name under heaven given among men by which we must be saved. Salvation comes from the Lord. So however deep you are this evening, your place of refuge and rescue is in Jesus Christ faith in him, running to him and saying, you died to take all my sin away. I've run from you. You died to forgive the running and to restore me and save me and bring me back to God. I want to plug into you to be brought back to God. You can call on the Lord tonight and know that you are fully restored. So turn to him this evening. However your running looks and however far away you are, whether it's just a little bit far and you'd like to be closer, or whether you feel you're very far, call on him, and he, in his love, is ready to hear the genuine cry of the heart of one who knows they cannot lift themselves out of that pit. And you can be brought this evening into a love that is higher and wider and deeper than anything in this world. Betsy said to Corey, we must tell people what we've learned here. We must tell them there's no pit so deep that he is not deeper still. That's our testimony as a church. And we must tell a broken city that is full of beauty, but is full of brokenness, that there's no broken place where you're broken beyond repair. There's no pit so deep that he is not deeper still. Let's pray together. And I'm going to use a prayer of John Calvin's that he prayed at the end of his commentary on Jonah 2. O Lord, grant that in the trials by which we must be daily exercised, we may raise upwards our minds to thee and never cease to think that thou art near us, and that when the signs of thy wrath appear, and when our sins thrust themselves before our eyes to drive us to despair, may we still constantly struggle and never surrender the hope of thy mercy, until having finished all our contests, we may at length freely and fully give thanks to thee and praise thy infinite goodness, such as we daily experience, that being conducted through continual trials, we may at last come into that blessed rest which is laid up for us in heaven through Christ, one Lord. Amen.